Welcome to the Social Expedition. Fueling your digitally social experience. This is show number 15, January 13th, 2010. So number 15, can you believe it? We should be having a party.
I can never
believe it. Divisible by 3 and 5, both prime numbers. It's a prime occasion for parties.
Golly, I feel like 15 is maybe like the tinfoil anniversary. I should have gotten us party hats.
Tinfoil party hats? So that Google can't figure out that we're having a party?
You know? With our tinfoil hats on?
Yeah,
Google, you're not invited.
I think there's going to be
In China, and then Google really won't be invited.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think they've probably got a deal going on there. But I guess they're threatening to pull out of China this week? Mm-hmm.
Well, what they're doing is basically some quote-unquote hackers, meaning pretty much the Chinese government, have been trying to get into the email accounts of several human rights activists. And so Google's response to that is just like, well, you know, we've been censoring this stuff because of you guys. So we're just going to, like, open up the internet access. And if you've got a problem with that, then, well, we're out. And, you know, so are the jobs that we've brought with us.
Mm-hmm. Bananas.
So Google's threatening China.
Pretty much. Leave. I think they're about the only corporation that can actually do that.
How many people are over there?
I'm not sure exactly. I'd have to do a little bit more research.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. But Google is kind of they're getting pretty big.
Mm-hmm. Big too big for their britches.
Too much. That's just too much power. I mean, you know, they can wind up being a government on their own somehow. You know, just keep track of everybody. They are the big brother. In a way. But hey, they still keep making cool stuff, and that's why people keep using them. So,
it's true.
Mm-hmm. You know. I can kick it for a while, but I usually wind up caving in and going, yeah, okay, you know, that is a pretty cool browser. You know, these are pretty cool tools that they come up with. You got some information together here about this Google Street View thing.
Oh, yeah, this sounds really cool.
Yeah, so, I read about that.
So basically, I mean, it's not sure yet. What they're saying is that there's going to come a point soon. Google's got this patent pending, I guess, or they may have had the patent go through. Yeah, they were granted the patent. Will basically allow them to put ads in your real-time Street View experience. So it would
be
like...
Well, let's be clear. Street View isn't a real-time experience.
True. True. There's a car in my driveway that blew up like 3 years ago. So, yes, true. But your advertising experience would be real-time. So it would be like, here I am, Street Viewing this street, and there's this billboard, but instead of being the old picture that was on the billboard in, say, 2007 or whenever that picture was taken, it'll be an advertisement. And, you know, it could be extremely, extremely interesting. Leave it to Google to find a new way to make money.
Well, but what's kind of cool about that is because those billboards are already advertisements, it's actually not going to be very intrusive at all.
It's true. I mean, they are already there. They're in your view. I mean, the one kind of question that was posed in the story that I read about it, which I can't help but wonder, is if those billboards, you know, within Street View were visible, if the messages on them were visible, then, you know, what about those advertisers who had purchased that billboard space? Do they have any rights, really? You know, and when you're in Google Street View, do they have any rights to that image with their advertising message on it?
Oh, I'm sure they don't. Otherwise, Google wouldn't be there. You know? But it looks neat. It sounds great. And Google is the king of making money off of advertising that people feel good about. So I kind of wonder, though, how many people use the Street View? What about you guys? I don't much at all.
I use Street View.
Do you use Street View?
Absolutely.
Okay, so when do you use it?
I used it a lot when I was looking at apartments, when I first moved back here to Memphis and I was looking at apartments, because I would find the address. But, you know, here in Memphis, you want to know what kind of neighborhood you're looking at. Really good stuff sometimes backs up to not so good stuff. You know, it happens everywhere.
Okay.
So I'd want to be able to look and see, oh, okay, actually I know exactly where that is. It's right next to this and that, and kind of get a feel for the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I mean, other than that, I also just look at it for my own entertainment because I like to, you know, it's entertaining to be like, oh, that's my house, and there's my, you know, old dorm. And,
yeah, but yeah. I mean, that's, you know, you look at your house, you know, a couple of times, and then, okay, that's it.
You've but there are utilities in it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is, like, especially if I'm going somewhere where I've never been before.
Yeah.
Like, I like to be able to look at the storefront so I know what I'm looking for.
Hmm.
And, you know, one thing that's really cool that they've been doing, too, is that they've been, well, they've got the photo service Picasa, and they've started enabling geotagging on that. So if you've got a public photo that's mm-hmm. geotagged for that place,
right.
Google's going to associate that. So, you know, you can, in one application, Street View, you can see what a building looks like, and then you can see pictures that people have taken there. So you're not seeing what it, not just seeing what it actually looks like.
Yeah.
You're also seeing how people see it.
Mm-hmm.
Hm. Interesting.
Yeah. Sure. Sure enough.
Dave doesn't buy it.
Mm-hmm. No. I do. I guess I just kind of questions like, you know, what happens to the you know, the long tried, you know, method of going somewhere and discovering it in person, including the dives.
That kind of depends on, like, what kind of time I've got, you know?
Yeah. Sure, okay. Sure.
You know, I'm still driving down the street and thinking, like, oh, that place looks interesting. I should check it out.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Maybe as, with as little time as we have these days, we're kind of forced into these concentrated, you know.
It's true. Do you know what it is? It's a vicious cycle. They're all working together. Facebook sucks out all of our time because we're always on Facebook.
It started with the washing machine.
Exactly. And then we don't have enough time to actually drive somewhere, so we have to look at it on Google Street View. It's a conspiracy.
Mm. All right. So what other conspiracy kind of things are going on out there that you kind of have to wonder, okay, are these guys in cahoots with somebody else? What pops to mind? It's not a pop quiz. I'm just kind of wondering. You got to have something top of mind. These guys are over there. There's some shady stuff going on over it. Here's what comes to mind for me. Just to start the conversation here.
Get the
and that
ball
is
rolling.
This suicide machine thing with Facebook.
You are obsessed with that
I
lately.
Am. Facebook, I am. I really think this is a problem for Facebook. They've stepped on it, blocking that particular application, essentially deleting you out of Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
All your photos, all your friends, on, you know. Even your own photo, pictures of yourself. That's a little scary. I think we should be bothered a little bit that Facebook is not letting that happen. You know, I don't know. Something about it just makes me a little uneasy.
Here's the thing, though. Here's where I kind of get maybe them blocking it. I'm not saying this is why they did it, but here's the reason why I'm kind of glad they did. Because all you need with this suicide machine, as far as I know, is the same information that you need to log into your Facebook page, right?
Right.
Your username and password. Well, I can think of at least one place where my password is stored, and that is on my browser, on my laptop. It's stored there, and, you know, somebody else may know it, somebody that I've given my password to down along the way for whatever reason, and what if I cross them? Next thing I know, they're on the suicide machine deleting my entire Facebook profile. And, I mean, seriously, your passwords are not that sensitive. It just makes – I think there's so much room for abuse of something like that
yeah.
that it actually makes me feel more comfortable that they
blocked it. And the suicide machine, like, changes your email address and password to something you don't know, meaning that there's the potential there for that information to be used maliciously.
There's a lot of room for abuse, I think. And I think it's a good thing. You know, if you want to delete your Facebook profile, then go delete it. That option is available
sure,
to you.
Sure, but it could take you hours. It might take you a day.
That's not true.
You know?
You just a click of a button.
Oh, but you've not wiped out the instances of all your stuff that you've uploaded, which is still there.
It's still there stored on
you
their...
You delete your profile, but...
In Facebook. But it's not up for people to look at anymore. I've deactivated my profile once before.
Have you really?
Absolutely.
How was that?
Very difficult. I was working on my master's dissertation, and it was painful.
Okay.
But I did it. I think I lasted all of 4.5 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've read the terms of use of Facebook. Actually, I have. Hunting down another problem. And they do say that they don't allow any automated entries to come in and just automatically go through and, you know, methodically do things. And that's what the suicide machine does.
Sure, sure.
You know,
I think it's a good thing, Dave. Yeah. I have to disagree. I think it's a good thing that
we'll
they
see.
Don't.
Okay. That's good.
Also, it's a business and they have to make money and they're selling a lot of advertising.
Another
so.
Day, another dollar, man.
Yeah. We're useless to them if we're not there, so...
Okay, so then that would be a problem. Then it'd be like, okay, no, you know, if you're just trying to keep these profiles in there, even though they're abandoned, even though your count is wrong, because on average, who knows, everybody has 1.6 profiles on Facebook.
Yeah, but if it's just a bantam, there's still the point, there's still, like, the possibility that you would show back up and be seeing those ads.
Okay. All right, well, time will tell, as it usually does. So we'll see where that's going. Because we know Mark is wanting to, Mark Zuckerberg, Marky Z, is wanting to take.
Marky Z.
Marky
you
Z.
Guys pals?
He rocks. He's wanting to, get folks using Facebook without actually having to go there. And so there's a lot of this ubiquitous social networking going on, no matter where you're at. All tied back to the mothership of Facebook, which, hey, I like it. All right. Hey, which while we're here, we might as well go ahead and mention that this Friday, we're gonna talk privacy type stuff with the core conversation version of the expedition at from 11:30 to 12:30 Central Time.
That's right.
So yeah, get on your soapbox and dial in and share your rants on the privacy.
So I mean, we've talked about a little bit before about how like I moved here from Indiana and how much I like it here, and well, really one of the big reasons that I moved here was I fell in love with and did a little bit of research into a few records that came out on Ardent Records throughout the past. And we've actually, our guest today for the podcast is Rachel Hurley, who does social media for pretty much the whole Ardent system. Like, they've got Ardent Studios, Ardent Recordings, and Ardent Records. So let's go ahead and cut into that real quick.
Our guest this week is Rachel Hurley, who is the social media manager at Ardent. Welcome to the expedition.
Thanks for having me.
Yay! We finally get to meet you after all these years.
I've been staying low, staying in.
I don't remember if it was Twitter or Facebook or what out there where I first got to know of you. But it's just great to meet you in the flesh.
Nice to meet you, too.
I think we crossed paths over at South by Southwest in 2007.
Oh, yeah?
I was there principally for the interactive piece, and then, of course, you were there. Were you there for both?
I was there for the music portion, mm-hmm. Yes. I'm mostly self-taught in terms of everything social media, although I did attend Blog World in 2007 and 2008.
Okay. How was that?
You know, there's so much information out there, and, you know, you think you're engaged and looking and everything, but then you go to something like that and just walk through the booths and you find out about so many applications and platforms that you had no idea existed. Mm-hmm. So it's really good for that.
Here's a tough question. Okay, the budget only allows for one show. I'm either going to South by Southwest or Blog World, hypothetically. Mm-hmm. What should I do?
Well, I've never been to the interactive portion of South by Southwest.
Oh, okay.
So I don't really know what it entails. I go mostly to promote music when I go.
Yeah.
But Blog World's in Las Vegas, and mm-hmm. I've been to Austin many times, so I suggest Las Vegas.
Really? I'm more the Austin type person. Yeah. Las Vegas, just all that. The facades and everything is all fantastic, but it's just too Disney-like for me.
I I thought I would hate it. I really thought that it would be so cheesy and I would hate it. But I went there and it was just so over the top that I had a fantastic time. And it is a different type of, experience from the people that you meet, especially at Blog World, obviously, and you go to classes all day and that kind of thing. So I enjoyed it. Maybe I'm just, I usually go to Austin twice a year for South by Southwest and for the Austin City Limits Festival. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm just spoiled and I'm just like, Austin, eh. But yeah. I do like Austin, but when I went to Las Vegas, I just had a better time.
So how long have you been doing this social media thing?
Well, it's hard to say. I guess, do you consider blogging social media?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I'll say 2003.
Okay.
That's how I started with a blog. And I'd always wanted to have a website. And I remember being in college and getting, like, my first $2,000 computer and sitting in front of it and thinking, oh, I want to build something with this. But
yeah.
What should it be?
Yeah.
You know, and until kind of blogs came out, I guess it never occurred, hey, I'll make a website just about myself. But that's kind of what I started doing. And then I think in terms of other social media practices, it kind of blossomed with MySpace when mm-hmm. that started out.
So as a practitioner, you're you know, you're one that has come up from the ranks, a very organic person, a professional, as opposed to, I guess, a classic, you know, trained through marketing and PR type, you know, education and that coming from an agency or something like that. So you're coming from the people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, into the social media realm. And so as the manager out there at Ardent of social media, we were talking earlier about everything's changing all the time. So kind of, if you would, kind of run us through that whole experience there with social media at Ardent.
Well, I think the biggest thing that it has done for me is that it has been a great networking tool. And when you do go to places like South by Southwest or CMJ or other conferences, and you meet people and you can connect with them on Facebook or on Twitter, then you can continue that relationship. And, you know, you might meet somebody who owns a certain company or runs a certain type of website or does something that in the immediacy of meeting them, you don't think that you really have anything that you can work on together. But as that relationship continues and other things come up, then it's great to be able to say, this person runs this website and I need someone to do this thing for me. I know someone already that does that, instead of starting from scratch. You know, which I know in the past for me has been, you know, really nerve-wracking when you need someone to fix something for you and you don't even know where to start. Mm-hmm. Or you don't even know how to fix it or, you know, what needs to be done. You know, just having those contacts that you can go to for advice, you know, or who work in an industry that you're unfamiliar with.
Your network is like an asset that I don't think it's found its place on the traditional resume yet.
Mm-hmm.
But no doubt businesses, you know, many of them recognize the fact that, okay, it's you and what you know, but then also the network that you're connected to is kind of is the value that you bring to the table.
Right.
In being able to have, you know, solve things that need to get done for whatever organization you have been working for.
Right.
And I know Ardent's gone through a lot of changes. The whole music industry is kind of turned inside out with so much going on with the internet and everything. So on that evolution, when you first, you know, first got them out there into some of these, you know, popular spaces, like is there some Ardent maybe on MySpace and
Facebook? Sure, all the bands have their own MySpace profiles, and they have their own Facebook profiles, and we really try to push the bands to work those angles themselves, because the people that follow them on Twitter or are friends with them on Facebook, they really are looking for a direct connection to those artists. And right. I know that when I follow a Twitter account of an artist and I can tell it's their publicist writing the tweets, I usually just unfollow them because I don't want just an update on where they're playing or that their new album is out. You know, I want to know who they are and what they're interested in. So that's what we really encourage the artists there to do.
Yeah, I follow Colin Molloy of the Decemberists on Twitter, and it's kind of fun to watch that because you can tell he's trying to figure it out as much as the rest of us are.
Right.
It's not somebody who's gone in thinking they know everything about it and how to promote the band. It's just a guy who happens to be one of my favorite songwriters.
Right. And for me, the thing that has been the most beneficial is not something that I know that I can quantify monetarily. I can't say I use Twitter and it's made me this amount of money, but I can tell you different examples of how I've used Twitter and it has benefited me. I know that just a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to someone on Twitter that had tweeted something about Big Star and Alex Chilton, and it happened to be a website called The Vinyl District, which is the blog for Record Store Day. Now, you're familiar with Record Store Day? That's like a national year thing.
Yeah.
And they're the official blog for it. And so I retweeted their tweet, and they came back, and they're like, Ardent Studios, wow, I can't believe, you know, blah, blah, blah. And now the guy who writes that website is going to fly to Memphis in February, spend a few days at Ardent with the studio and some of the bands and Jody from Big Star, and then he's going to do an Ardent theme week on the Vinyl District and write about the different record labels and about the studio and the history and the whole thing right up before Record Store Day.
That's something
that wouldn't have ever happened if it hadn't been for our relationship connecting through Twitter.
Yeah.
Man.
So I can't say you know, I posted, which I do post, hey, have you gotten your Big Star box set yet? You know, and we have sold some through doing that. I was
expecting
that
one for Christmas. Something
but more, it's been about gaining relationships than selling products.
Coming from the consumer side of things, and like, it's great that you have that perspective, because in essence, you are doing this kind of the same kind of thing for, I guess, a lot of different people via Arden's interests.
Mm-hmm.
In broadcasting and letting folks know what's going on without being that classic bad megaphone.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a post out there about Jerry Lawler's social media campaign was an epic fail.
Yeah.
And real quick, where is your blog? Let's get that URL out there.
RachelAndTheCity.com.
And that is not and?
It's and, A-N-D. But okay. On Twitter, it is A-N because they cut me off.
There's only so many
letters. So it's Rachel Ann, A-N, the city for Twitter, and RachelAndTheCity.com for the website. And
so,
the difference is that it's social media is about a conversation and being connected to people. It's not about holding up a megaphone and just blasting out their information, you know, kind of like what your tour schedule is or something. You know, I'd rather hear you talk about something meaningful to me. And that's what, kind of the problem that I had with Jerry Lawler's social media campaign was that he was using Twitter, but it was just to say, vote for me, see me on Channel 5 at this time, you know, I'm going to be here, I'm going to do this. It wasn't really to engage any of his followers what he had to say.
It sounds like it wasn't even really like a megaphone, like it was just like a TV guide.
Right. And that's the opposite of what Mayor Wharton did. Mayor Wharton actually used it to condense a lot of his, what he wanted to do into 140 characters and then link it to something with more information. So get my attention on what you're trying to talk about and then tell me where to find more information. Mm-hmm. And then also, if I had a question about what that was, to answer it. You know, because not only would you be answering me, but everybody that was following you would get that answer too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think that he did a much better job on trying to connect with the voter. And I think people felt that, you know, they felt that he was trying to engage everyone and he was listening. And it wasn't just about telling you, hey, I'm going to be at this place or I'm going to do this or listen to me on the radio or listen to me on the news.
You know, so when you start looking, you first start getting into it, I think it's, you know, it's pretty classic to do this, like to count followers. Yeah, you're always trying to report to somebody, even if it's just yourself. Okay, how well am I doing? I'm spending all this time. I mean, what am I getting back? And then that may, and how you communicate with them, you know, whether it's just broadcasting or conversing,
mm-hmm.
and then starting to look at like what kinds of followers and engagement, you know, is a big word, you know, right now. What's been your experience there?
Well, I was definitely, you know, probably the same as most people when I really started getting into using Twitter for Ardent Studios, and I just thought, oh, look, I'm gaining followers. You know, mm-hmm. that's awesome. Look at all these followers.
Yeah.
And then the more I thought about it, you know, and more that I realized, you know, some people might follow Ardent Studios just because they're a fan of Big Star or Chris Bell or because they live in Memphis. And not necessarily be a potential client. And that's what we're using that social media for, is to engage potential clients. And so then I had to start thinking about who are our clients. Well, they're producers or engineers or musicians. And so I needed to start seeking out those types of people. And so, you know, one of the things that I did was I thought about Mix Magazine. Well, who follows Mix Magazine? Probably producers, engineers, and musicians. So let me go over there and try to engage some of their followers so that I can have a more viable follower list. So I can, whatever I'm talking about that I'm trying to put out there is going to find the clients that we're looking for. And I think that's what a lot of people are probably doing more of now. They're realizing that it's just not about the numbers, it's about the quality. And you hear that a lot, too. Is it better to have 10,000 followers or 1,000 that are really interested in what you have to say?
No, your blog is on Tumblr, correct?
I have two. I have rachelinthecity.com, which is the regular website, and then the Tumblr website is more of a really personal. Just, you know, if you know about Tumblr, yeah, it's just about pictures and songs and,
right,
you know, it's a little, it's like an extended Twitter if you have more than 140 characters to say about something.
Yeah, yeah, it's less of a micro blog and more of a mini blog.
Right.
One of the things that I really like about having like a full-fledged blog is that I like having comments. And I know Tumblr doesn't actually have comments built in. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how do you participate and build relationships on that?
Well, first of all, the cool thing about Tumblr is that it is kind of a very inside thing. And you know who's following you. You know the people that are reading your Tumblr blogs because you have a follower list. And you can also reblog and make comments. And so it's not that you can't have comments. It's that whatever comments you make show up on your own Tumblr blog. So it's a little bit less likely to have trolls. I like that. And I like knowing who's following me. You know, I like making those kind of connections. But I do have the other one, too, okay, for, you know, when I do want to write Jerry Lawler's media campaign was an epic fail.
Have you had any troll experiences that you've had to deal with?
Oh, I used to have a lot. A lot.
So, what's, give us some troll advice.
Never engage the troll. Never answer.
Just let them rant.
You will never win. Ever. You will never get into an argument with somebody that you don't know on the internet. Mm-hmm. When you have to, you know, be accountable for what you say to them, they don't have to be accountable because you don't even know who they are.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So never engage the troll.
Okay. Well, that's new. That's interesting because the conventional wisdom is, you know, engage them. Not necessarily engage, but respond to them. Mm-hmm. Just acknowledge them. But then if they're just being a troll, then sure, you know, kick them out.
Well, when you wrote your post, you had the right to your opinion, and when they commented, they had the right to their opinion. And if you think you're going to change somebody's opinion on the internet who you don't know who they are, best of luck to you.
Well, you've done great things here in Memphis with regards to bringing the music out into the social realm, so we greatly appreciate that.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you're doing an awesome job, and you've got you're freed up a little bit, so if some folks are looking for somebody with your talents, they can find you. Where's the best place?
You can email me at rachel@rachelandthecity. I'm always happy to do consulting work for other people. I'm very interested in expanding my social circle, as most of you know. So I'm always happy to talk to anybody about whatever.
Great to have you out here today. Great to finally meet you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
I tell you, it was so good to finally get to meet Rachel.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's one of the first Memphians I followed.
Yeah, I was like, okay, you're going to this tweet up, you know, okay, great, I can finally get to meet you. There's just so many near misses. But yeah, she's been out there a while doing great stuff, so really enjoyed meeting her.
Definitely. I think it's always fun, too, when, you know, we're talking to somebody new, as we do every week, and they say some of these same things that, you know, we talk about all the time amongst ourselves about social media, like stuff that we think. And it's just always fun to hear somebody else completely independently, you know, say those same things and the same things they've noticed or realized about the best tactics and the way this whole social thing works. Interesting to see your minds converge like that.
Man, oh man. So what else? What do we have going on here? We've got, what, next week on Wednesday?
Yep, the 20th is Twilight Camp.
We got a good turnout. A lot of RSVPs going on there.
Anticipated on some RSVPs. That's meetup.com/social expedition. If you want to check that out, you can find out about all of our meetups at that location. And actually, next week, too, we have Eric Matthews here on the podcast. So
yeah, oh, that would be great.
Definitely want to check that out as well.
Cool. So with that, I guess we're out of action here for a couple of days till Friday.
Yeah. the usual amount of time.
A couple of days. This comes out on Thursday.
Well, you know, what I was thinking was a week initially, but it's like, no.
Oh,
actually,
we're here on Friday.
Yes.
Same bat time, same bat place.
How's it going? This is like the first full work week we've had in, gosh, weeks.
Seems like forever.
No, I think my body has finally thawed out, so.
5 whole working days.
Not right. Next week, though. Woohoo!
Right on. We are closed. Luna Web is closed for MLK Day.
3-day weekend. It's like Saturday 2.
Saturday 2, Electric Boogaloo?
It is, yes. It's my favorite. All right.
Well, all right. I guess with that, you know, we'll talk to you next week. Do tune in Friday for the Core Conversation. We'll be talking about privacy and social fresh convention that actually took place. Was it this week?
Yep, on Monday.
Yeah, Monday.
In Nashville.
I thought I started hearing stuff about it like Friday, but it's probably just people getting excited.
So fresh.
So clean.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
The Social Expedition Podcast is produced at the offices of LunaWeb, a Memphis leader in web development and social media, online at lunaweb.com. Your hosts are Dave Barger, Elizabeth Kaywine, and Matthew Crawford Trissler, who edits the podcast. Our theme music is The Year Before the War by Eric Maskell, available at ericmaskell.com. For more information about the Social Expedition, including links mentioned during the podcast, visit socialexpedition.com. Thanks for listening.
Wait, no, we're not recording, right?